everybody says, you know, these eVTOLs, these battery electric aircraft, they can't do this, they can't do that, they can't. And I said, well, let's just pay attention to what they can do. And if they can do this and we can build a commercial business around what they can do, then that's the beginning of this evolution of electric flight.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host Jon Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
Today's episode is brought to you by our platinum sponsor, XTI Aerospace. They are powering the vertical economy, building a long-range VTOL, and you can find more at xtiaerospace.com. Now, please remember to like, comment, and share on this channel, and enjoy today's podcast. Welcome to Hangar X Studios, and we're excited you're here. This is where innovators and investors and everybody who's looking at the entire range of the vertical economy and what's happening next, where we're going, and who is making the breakthroughs, who's making businesses grow and drive and actually creating the new solutions and the new technology that are accelerating what's happening. So please take some time to like, comment, and share, subscribe to this channel. Tell a friend about it. And we're going to have something coming out soon that we think is going to change the landscape in aviation. It's called Hangar X Daily Brief, which is going to be an intelligence brief that comes out every day about what's really happening in the industry. We believe it's going to be a go-to resource from everybody from the feedback that we're already getting. And really excited about today to have Dave Stepanek back on the podcast. So first of all, Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Josh. Great to be back.
So, Chief Transformation Officer at Bristow Helicopters. Bristow is one of the largest operators of helicopters in the world. Is that correct, Dave?
That is correct. Yes, we are one of the largest by revenue and numbers of transport helicopters, and we operate in 18 countries around the world, supporting the oil services, oil and offshore energy services, and government services through primarily our search and rescue programs in the United Kingdom, Ireland, the Netherlands, the Dutch Caribbean, and then the Falkland Islands.
And we had a fascinating conversation that was in January of 2025, so about 11 months ago. But you can go back and watch that. But what we were talking about is the chief innovation officer, you're looking at your business model, the needs of your customers. Is there an application to what you do in the advanced air mobility space? Are there certain eVTOLs? You know, we talked about Beta and Elroy, and what were some of the other platforms you were considering a year ago, Dave? There was a number of them.
Yeah, so we had Beta and Elroy, and also Elroy Air with their Chaparral, their uncrewed aircraft, the hybrid electric powertrain system. There's Electra.aero, also a hybrid electric powertrain with it's a fixed wing aircraft using blown lift and ultra short field takeoff and landing. So your approaches and departures are very similar to what a helicopter does. Yes, you have similar access and departure points of a helicopter at the cost of a fixed wing, coupled with the cost of, lower cost of electric powertrain systems and distributed electric propulsion. Vertical Aerospace is another one of our key partners, 100% battery electric. Manufacturing process, our production and manufacturing process will be in the United Kingdom for certification as well. And that's more of a passenger carrying shorter range mission, and then we have Embraer's Eve, or just Eve now, one offshoot of Embraer. So we were looking at a variety of different capabilities, and I think I hear this stuff. It's still coming out on the forefront as everybody says, you know, these eVTOLs, these battery electric aircraft, they can't do this, they can't do that, they can't. And I said, well, let's just pay attention to what they can do. And if they can do this and we can build a commercial business around what they can do, then that's the beginning of this evolution of electric flight. And that's what we want to be part of. So we're taking, at Bristow, we're taking our 75 plus years of vertical lift experience. We also operate some airlines. We do own an airline, own and operate an airline in Australia called Air North. We have other airlines in our history. So we get the whole process, but we've got the intellectual property. We've got the experience of doing it. And does electric propulsion systems, or do electric propulsion systems, fit into our business? And how does it fit in? And that's why we started looking at the different markets and different applications, the different aircraft that are available. And we selected the ones that we have today. And we're just delighted. And we think about this whole thing as a big network, not just, oh, I've got one aircraft that can go 40 miles. I can carry four passengers. How do I tie that into a passenger and cargo network where you can expand from urban mobility to regional mobility, and really expand the catchment of your marketplace and change the way people move around these regions where they don't have direct aviation or point to point transportation alternatives. Everybody's getting in a car and driving.
Well, and I love what you guys did too, as the innovation officer, and you're flying helicopters and very, very well and safe. And, you know, since you and I have talked, I've actually gone out and gotten my been flying a helicopter.
You were saying you were going to do that. That's right.
No, that has been a blast to get to learn how to do it. I got to fly one down here in Chevrolet. But, you know, you're looking at these different platforms, and you're, instead of saying what they can't do, and we've heard a lot about that, but hey, what can it do in hot and high situations? How does it handle turbulence? I mean, you're looking at real world case studies. How long do the batteries last? What's the service life? How do, if I was all electric, how do I charge them? You started looking at all this, and you go, you know what? I think there is a case to employ these profitably as a company, but also to solve bigger problems for our customers and even probably reduce their costs. So, and then at the end of the interview, which was fascinating, you mentioned you're going to be going to Norway, which is my family's from, and you're going up to Stavanger, where I've been many times. And you actually had a partnership with the Norwegian government in EASA and the FAA and their Civil Aviation Authority and the Norwegian Department of Transportation and Energy, or the Interior, and anyway,
yeah, environment, yeah.
The environment, yeah. Right? And you formed this thing, and you went out there. And I said, Dave, since you're going to be flying these real-world eVTOLs, the first person I know of who we've had on the podcast who's actually taking this technology and saying, can we make a business case? Does the acquisition cost, the cost of, you know, the total cost of operating this, the flight envelope fit? And I said, when you get that data, please come back. And, folks, that's what today is. They've finished up, I think, two out of the three phases. You're about two-thirds of the way out of the work up there, but we got some real data. And Dave's actually been able to fly some of these machines, which I want to hear all about. So, Dave, maybe you could take us through this whole process from the beginning. Or actually, let's do this. Before we get into that, what are your biggest takeaways for you personally in Bristow after the flight time that you spent in Norway flying some of these platforms?
I think my biggest takeaway is that at Bristow, our leadership team and our board are committed to our vision of being leaders in innovative and sustainable aviation solutions. And by doing what we're doing in our commitments to the different eVTOL companies and AAM companies that we're working with, and how we're going about our discussions with government, with regulators, with marketing, and really being a cheerleader for advanced air mobility in general, demonstrates that leadership.
So let me ask this. So what you saw there, your commitment to going in this direction, what you saw there says we can follow this commitment because the TRLs, the tech is ready. Is that fair?
The tech's ready. The tech is ready, but the aircraft's still got to get through certification. So this is an experimental aircraft. So I'm happy to talk about some of the things we had to deal with, but it, most importantly, two-thirds through. Now, this is a conventional takeoff and landing, 100% battery electric, the Alea 300 CX.
And that's by Beta. Everybody out
there. Manufactured by Beta Technologies.
You can go take a look at the
Beta. Yep. Yeah. Beta is now publicly traded, so you can see a lot of information about the company. It's Beta's got the greatest ticker symbol for a company's name is their name. So we had identified, I'll go back even further before we started Beta. We had identified the Nordics, Norway, Sweden, Finland, as a prime opportunity for early adoption of advanced mobility, mostly because of the geographical barriers that exist in the region. A lot of fjords, a lot of mountain ranges, lots of airports. smaller population, especially relative to the numbers of aerodromes that they have. Norway has 47 airports for 5 million people. So very long country, and you have lots of tunnels and infrastructure, have great infrastructure, but they have, for point-to-point transportation, it's necessary to move by air. So how do we do that better? So that was always the key. And whilst we were doing that, we got to meet with some of the folks from government and the Norwegian Civil Aviation Authority, and they were kicking off their innovation fund where they wanted to put together some international test arenas to demonstrate the utility of zero and near zero emission aviation. So we proposed utilizing the Beta ALIA for the first part of this. So back to our early philosophical guide is pragmatic approach, crawl, walk, run. So we're crawling with a conventional electric aircraft. We can test the battery. We can test the battery in different conditions. We can test the, how we manage the thermal and the conditioning of the battery. We also, I mentioned in the early discussions, with battery electric aircraft, the unusual phenomena that's going to occur when you're taking off and landing probably at maximum gross weight, because you're not burning off any of your, none of the energy is being consumed. It's just being energized.
Well, so that was something I was going to ask you, because a lot of flight planning, I'm taking off, I figure out what's my max takeoff here. But then to get to my max landing weight, I have to burn off some fuel.
Yep.
Right. And it's part of my mission planning. Every pilot's very familiar with this. And if I want to go into a, a high, hot environment or a shorter runway, to be able to do this safely, I'm going to have to, burn down.
You have to consume hundreds of pounds of fuel. Yeah. But
in an electric airplane, takeoff and landing weight are always going to be identical.
That's right. So our thesis was that it's gonna stress the landing gear, it's gonna stress the tires and wheels and brakes. And frankly, that's what we've seen. That's all we've seen with the aircraft in terms of maintenance repair of it, is we've had to replace the tires. We've done roughly 86 flights to date. Now we're not just poking holes in the sky. We did that in the first phase. We did the localization flights around Stavanger to get the airport comfortable with it, get the air traffic management comfortable with the aircraft, its approaches. Because this is a commercial airport. I mean, there's commercial airlines coming in every very often. I don't know how many movements they have, but it's probably quite frequently. Once we got through that, what we called phase one, and went through a process of debrief and reporting, we moved to phase two, which is VFR flights between Stavanger and Bergen, which is 90 nautical miles across the fjord.
Mm-hmm.
And we started doing that. And we loaded the baggage compartment, or the cargo area, up with sand bags. We can't carry any cargo for value because of this. It's an experimental aircraft. So we loaded it up with, 1,000 pounds, 1,100 pounds, did the mission, went through the how much energy do we have, how much reserve do we have, back and forth. And now that we've done that a number of times, we completed phase two, we're getting ready to enter phase three, which is IFR flights between Stavanger and Bergen and some other towns.
So what's the range of the Beta? You said it's 90 miles Stavanger to Bergen. What?
One way, 90 miles, but we have a little over 200, right at 200 nautical miles of range available to us. So
can you do that round trip, or do you have to charge when you land at the destination airport?
We've been charging at the destination airport, just as part of the safety margins that we want for this is an experimental aircraft. The energy is there, unless you have a really heavy headwind. The energy's been there for us to get back if necessary. And we're managing on 30 minutes reserve.
Okay.
And then there's a low voltage reserve battery as well. We have had some technical difficulties to deal with, which I think is really important to find now. And what they've been is long range radio transmissions have been interrupted by the EMI of the electric motor.
Okay.
So the solution.
I've been curious about that, because there's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is what we're doing. We're learning. Right. And we're putting it in the real world. I always talk about.
Could you explain to people why there, the EMI, why there's an interference field, electromagnetic field that exists?
Yeah, well, you got a magnet, right? A big engine.
And then you guys also, the cablings are all energized. And
the cablings are energized. You got the radio. The antenna is not far from where the motor is right now. They do it in certain placements, so that's probably going to change. And so you have this electromagnetic induction emanating from the motor itself. There's probably some static electricity that's being generated as well. And of course, radios, antennas have to have a ground plane. So it's all somewhat connected. And then you got the EMI portion. Now the aircraft's been through EMI testing. It's just in a certain conditions, in certain weather conditions, a little wetter, a little damper, we have this interference. So the solution has been to put a copper shield around the motor. That seems to have solved the problem, but there's going to be some further testing. And what was really important for me that we had this process is, so we flagged this as a safety issue. You lose communication in a certain distance, in a certain location. So we went through a very rigorous process of back to what Bristow does. We have these core competencies and these processes and procedures, and part of it is our safety management system and our return to service processes. So we put it through what we would do, a traditional certified helicopter process, and the flight crew as well. So we got all that done, and we're able to return it back to service through the Safety Review Board, BETA, Bristow, and the Norwegian Civil Aviation Authority. And that was really a robust process, and I'm very happy we had some kind of a problem. I didn't want to fly for 300 hours and find nothing. And then in 1,000 hours, you do find something. So it was really, really interesting to see that. We've done some other software improvements. We had to replace one of the battery. There's 5 battery packs in the BETA aircraft. One of them had to replace and had a thermal sensor that was misfiring a bit. Replaced it on the line. We've completed a 100-hour inspection on the aircraft. I talked to our maintenance engineer. The other thing we got to do is, I believe we have trained the first commercial electric aircraft pilots that are not working for original equipment manufacturer.
Oh, cool.
We have 2 pilots that are dedicated to this process. 1 engineer also gone through the training. I stepped through the training as well. But for us, just did some observation. And that was just a fantastic process. Our engineer, I contact him quite frequently and said, how are things going? He goes, well, I've become a glorified window washer. We haven't done any maintenance. I've replaced a couple of tires here and there. And now that we're doing a 100-hour inspection, which is just basically a look inspection, taking a lot of panels off, looking at things, looking at different attachment points on the wing, looking at the batteries, that sort of thing. And it's just great to have gone through that process so we can collect that data. When I think about how much helicopters cost to operate and all the data we have for each component by the hour, I'm asking our engineers to say, let's just continue to annotate the real use of the tires, because I think that's going to be the one that we'll be replacing and removing quite often. So we'll have to track, the hourly or landing uses of tires and brakes.
Yeah. And now you said you've flown about 300 hours.
That's what we would plan to do by the end of the phase. We're going IFR. We have flown just over 80 hours to date.
So I know it's early. How long does it take, when you get up to Bergen, you've flown 90 miles. How much does it take to recharge that 90 miles worth of range?
It's about 30 minutes.
Okay. That's actually better than I thought. And then it might be early, but are you seeing any indication at all, or is the engineers at BETA on predicting what is the service life of these battery packs? How many cycles can they do? Because you're going to be charging them more than you do an electric car.
Yeah, we've done 125 charge cycles to date. Now we have taken it. As part of the 100-hour inspection, we've complete discharge of the battery and recharge. And we also have a battery, like a thermal management process where we plug into the battery as well. So we got the charging system, and then you have the battery conditioning that we started about midway through this process. So the intention and the plan is that the batteries will last roughly 1,500 cycles.
Okay.
We are seeing very slight degradation over the current use of this battery, but again, very, very slight. It's like one kilowatt hour, 2 kilowatt hours we lost on the charging process. It's been very low. So far, very, very, very good data back, and you know, we'll be able to collect even more. And this is international testing. It's sponsored by the government. There will be an official report that comes out when we conclude the flight operations in January of 2026.
Okay, now I want to ask you this, because I'm sure everybody's excited to hear this. Dave, you got to fly this thing.
Yeah.
And what's it like? Yeah. Tell us about flying this beta up in the front, the whole all-electric airplane. You wouldn't think it'd be that much different, but from what you told me, it was, and it was really exciting. So,
yeah, I guess you could tell by the smile. I still think about it. Sometimes I can't believe I had this opportunity, you know, in my aviation career. I've been in it for a long time. I've flown a few helicopters here and there, small airplane. I even flew one of the electric, the Pipistrel Velius, which was very interesting. Of course, you had the engine right in front of you, so you could see the prop. But flying Aaliyah was certainly unique, in that when we were rolling down the runway and taxiing out, it's like driving a car. You know, you're just using the brakes to steer. It's quiet. There's no vibration. Your instant torque. You're rolling down the runway. You hit 89 knots, and you just kind of take a little finger and pull back on the side control, and you're at 500 feet before you know it. Powerful, smooth, quiet. It's like a powered glider.
Because you're low to the ground in this thing, is what it looks like, right?
You're very low to the ground. So you get this, the runway is going by fast. You have that sense. It's like being in a sports car, a rear engine sports car, so a proper one, that you get that launch control, and you just, you know, you pushes yourself back in the seat.
So does it have more, is it a different feel when you go to full power in this versus a piston airplane?
It is, because it's instant. It's instant. It just goes. It's quick.
You don't have to push in the throttle slowly like a homing. You just go bang to 100%.
That's right. And then as soon as you get to 500 feet, you roll it back. You're really cruising around 60% torque, mm-hmm. or 60% power, excuse me. It was amazing. I flew for just under an hour. I flew with one of the beta test pilots. We just basically flew around Stavanger. As I mentioned, there was it was a beautiful day. It was in September. It was, you know, bright sunny day. There were cruise ships in the harbor. There was a Disney cruise ship in the harbor. People were waving at us. We're flying around, you know, there's a heart on below the aircraft as well. That was the same aircraft they used at the Paris Air Show. So it's certainly been an attention grabber. We've a lot of news coverage, press, even the New York Times came up and flew with us, did a nice piece on it. There's been a lot of coverage there. Been a lot of interested parties, potential customers, governments, regulators have been visiting, insurers have been visiting to see this really unique operation that's happening in Norway. I'm just thankful for the Norwegian government. I'm thankful for Avinor and the Norwegian Civil Aviation Authority to have the entrepreneurship to do this.
Yeah. Now, who is Avinor?
Avinor is the owner of the airports in Norway.
Oh, that's okay.
It's a state-run organization like the energy company Equinor. They own 43 of the 47 airports, and they've made the investments in infrastructure that are necessary. So they built it. They put in a charging net system in Stavanger for us. So it's literally built into the tarmac. So we like you would get fueled, getting it right out of the concrete. You just open the latch and plug in. And then we have strategically placed charging cubes from Beta in locations, and we carry them as necessary. So it's been a really wonderful partnership, and I'm excited that they're going to do a phase two in 26 and 2027. Focusing on hybrid electric powertrains and regional mobility, and we hope to be part of that as well with electric.
That's fantastic. Okay, now you were talking about the different customers, and they're interested. So what have you and Bristow learned from a business case, what you're seeing now, and where might this fit in once it's certified into how you commercialize this as a for-profit company?
So we see it, and this has always been our philosophy as cargo first, regional cargo first. So supporting our current energy customers with their onshore logistics requirements. So they have to move a lot of stuff offshore. It has to be centralized in a port, a marine port, or a vertiport. And we could help bring some of that material in a sustainable and cost-effective way, as opposed to some of the land transportation that they need. So we think that there's an opportunity for regional cargo delivery. If you think about, we're a regional mobility player today. So our hub is our heliports in the energy service sectors, whether it's Aberdeen, Houma, Rio de Janeiro, Lagos. And then we spoke out to the rigs and platforms and different vessels that we support. Well, all the stuff and the people have to get in, they have to centralize to that hub. So they got to get from somewhere to there. And there's a really unique opportunities to do some initial cargo transportation onshore again. And then once we prove that the reliability, the kit that we'll need, the equipment that we'll need to go offshore will work, and then we can start thinking about cargo missions offshore with piloted aircraft. We believe in uncrewed aircraft for cargo missions offshore. And that's why we have this great partnership with Elroy and the Chaparral, because that type of aircraft fits their mission profile, 300 kilos, 300 miles, uncrewed, low cost, not complex, where it can go over the horizon and support bringing critical supplies to the energy companies offshore. And they are chomping at the bit to get this type of service, because it can really change their uptime. It can change the safety case of moving stuff to and from the ports. It's going to be a game changer for the energy companies, we believe.
So what is their biggest drivers? You've mentioned cost, safety, I think efficiency. Is there something else I've maybe missed? But what are their top characteristics?
You nailed it. Safety is first. So you got to be able to do it safely. So as low as reasonably practical is the risk is what you take. And then it's the cost structure, and then the efficiency. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it, of course, I think sustainability is still in the fore, but the sustainability in zero emission and near zero emission aviation really translates to lower cost structure.
Yeah.
Because the complexity of current drivetrains and powertrain systems and helicopters and in airplanes, they're complex. They require lots of overhauls. They have lots of high vibration temperatures, so they wear and tear on the airframe, where electric propulsion is a much lower cost of energy source and has less parts to deal with and more reliable parts. Now, I didn't get to say this, but the energy cost between Stavanger and Bergen is about $10. So 90 nautical miles.
Come on.
$10 worth of electric power that we're about $10 to $12, depending on the exchange rate. Now that's Norway. Norway has cheap power. They have most of their power is hydro. They get 98% of their power is relatively inexpensive.
But even 5x that is $50. So
yeah,
what is the airframes that would be replacing? If you're talking about this regional cargo role, is it like a Cessna Caravan? Is it a SH-72? Like what is it replacing?
What we see, especially in the Nordics, wasn't necessarily replacing like a Caravan or anything like that, is replacing belly cargo or providing more reliable services and a lower cost than belly cargo. Most of the cargo moves around Norway and Sweden and space available on Embraer 190s,
okay,
and ATRs and Dash 8s. So those aircraft are starting to run out of their life, especially the turboprop ones. See, the other thing it does is, ALIA is part of this, but Electra is mostly part of it, is if you look at a lot of the airports in around the world where they're the regional airports that used to have service in direct aviation, they used to have like Beechcraft 1900s flying in and different old ATRs and things like that, where you can get from like Springfield, Illinois to Evanston or, you know, St. Louis to a smaller little town where you can't do today. They also have shorter runways. So when you start bringing in regional jets, then you need the longer runways, which takes, you know, millions and millions of dollars of concrete and investment. A vehicle like Aaliyah, but more importantly, a vehicle like Electrodot Aero's CEL-9 with the ultra short range takeoff and landing, that doesn't require any additional infrastructure.
We're talking a few hundred to a few thousand feet, which, you know, it's interesting
right.
as we're looking at this just here in the U.S., we had Mike Whitaker on from the FAA.
Yeah.
But we have like 5,300-ish airports here in the U.S. Yeah. 480 have commercial service. Mm-hmm. But there's only 2,000 total that have a runway length over 2,000 or 2,500 feet. So think about it, 3,000
right.
air, over 3,000 airports here are under 3,000. So, you know, a Caravan can get in there, but any business jet, an Embraer 190, there's no way it could land there.
No way. Yeah, that's why we can't. That's why we have to drive these places. That's why we have to drive from Houston to the hill country of Texas, and why we have to drive from central Louisiana to go to the beach. There's no air transport because the airports can't support it. And that's, but we get that. We understand that, and that's why we've made these commitments to Electra and Beta and Elroy and others that have that capability of going in where the infrastructure exists. Right, you don't need to go out and build new $20 million vertiports. You don't need to go out and do all the other things that are necessary to support this new market. You can build it on the existing infrastructure, and then you can demonstrate that you can build a profitable business and a sustainable business model, which will allow investments in more infrastructure to expand into the urban air mobility space that's going to be necessary to really solve these traffic solutions in the future.
Yeah, do you have a sense of what's the cost of this compared to belly cargo? Is it comparable, less, or you might pay a premium, but you're getting things there faster?
We think we could do it for half the price.
Than belly cargo.
Yeah.
That is exciting for you guys.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
So I got to ask you this, Dave, what are the red flags?
Well, not certified. Nothing certified. We got to get there. And so the red flags, you got the certification, then do you have the capital to get you to certification?
Yep.
The certifications, you know, that's the Bell 525 behind me. I was on the customer advisory team. That's first flight 2015. It's not certified yet. It's not any fault of anybody, but it's a process, right? It's a long process. It's a lengthy process. It's a fly-by-wire helicopter. It's the first of its kind. So it's going to take a lot of capital to get there. And those are the red flags. Certification, the capital to get there, acceptance of the public, which we can't assume is going to happen. Yeah, we think we're cool. We're quiet. We've got new tech. We've got multiple redundant systems to avoid any of these single points of failure that exist in some aircraft. But we've got to demonstrate to ourselves safe, reliable, efficient. We've got to demonstrate to the regulators the same thing, and then to the public. So those are the things that we're going to be working on and focusing on. And then the other red flag I worry about is people getting ahead of the systems, people getting ahead of the processes that have kept aviation safe for a very long time and made it the most efficient and safe means of transportation today because of the technology, because of the pressures to get this into the space, and something goes wrong.
Ahead of the processes?
Yeah, just pushing ahead of the safety, the regulatory processes.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
And the evolution of operating aircraft, right? So I think I said this to you before, John. Where I saw Bristow, where Bristow really came inclusionary, is we're 75 years of evolution of operating aircraft. That's pretty. I mean, it's 75 years in evolutionary periods is not long, but in aircraft, it's a pretty long period. We've learned a lot through that, and now you got this revolutionary technology, and you got to intersect both those to get a point to make sure that we take all the things that we've learned and the practices that we have that. In some cases are process and procedures, it's manufacturing process, it's operational processes, but it's a culture of safety to allow you to get to zero accidents and zero injuries and zero incidents that you have to deal with. So I worry about that. I worry that we're going to get ahead of ourselves because of whatever rush to be the first or rush to be the first country or rush to be the first operator or rush to be the first OEM to get things going. We got to let the process manage itself.
You know, and as we as we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else that's coming out of this right now that you or some maybe somebody on the team, operations, logistics, maintenance, is there anybody else that says, hey, made some observations? You're like, wow, I hadn't thought of that going into this.
Well, the EMI issue was certainly one of them. And then, so we have one engine on the conventional aircraft. When we go to lifting vertically, we're going to have four plus the pusher in a lift plus cruise. There's more in aircraft like vertical aerospaces. There's more in Elroy's. What that aha moment of you got a large electromagnetic induction generator, and how are we going to manage that in terms of not just communications, but the navigations, the TCAS, all the things that could get affected by it? Is it going to require heavier shieldings? Is it going to require different cables that are going to reduce the payload? That was the one thing for me so far, is the aha moment. I've been very pleased with the battery. I've been very pleased with the aircraft itself, the Alea aircraft, met my expectations. I thought it was going to be low maintenance, and I'm happy to say that it has been and is today low maintenance.
So it's similar to my Tesla that I basically check the air in my tires and put fluid in the windshield wiper, and that's literally about all I've ever had to do to it.
That's exactly the same thing here. Yeah. It's just electric motors are great. You know, yeah, another aha moment I think we're seeing is we selected Electra and Elroy because of their hybrid electric powertrain systems, more range and payload, right? Plus you don't have the infrastructure issue with battery charging systems. That's an expensive process to put in these battery chargers. And now we see Vertical, we see Beta, and a few others. Joby just did a hybrid electric and a hydrogen electric flight. Archer's doing it. I think that's going to unlock some other operations for either Department of Defense and commercial side to do longer flights, higher payloads, and really help bridge some of the technological or infrastructure gaps that are available. So I'm happy to see companies like GE and Safran and Honeywell, those tier one suppliers, stepping into this space with serious investments. You know, they made a $300+ million investment in Beta. Safran made a major investment in the powertrain, the turbo generator system for the electric aircraft. So seeing that has been really, I think, validating that this is a technology that's going to be commercialized, and then being part of the earliest part of it has been, you know, very rewarding for us.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, as you actually study the design principles around a turbine, if you're going to do a turbine powered hybrid electric. Mm-hmm. Nobody's actually ever made a turbine for this size that's designed to start up and then stay at the same RPM the whole time. That's actually how you design a turbine for a power plant, but not for an aircraft. And those power plant turbines are massive. So I really believe as this matures, we're going to actually be doing a webinar on hybrid electric. We're going to have Vertigo on. We just talked to the guys at Ampere, but you know, there's a lot of neat things, different architectures out there. I think that's the future personally, but
yeah, the guys at Ampere are doing some great work too. We spent some time with them, and you know, it's really interesting what they're doing. And you know, one of the things I get to say at our board meetings is, because they'll see these flights happen, and I say, you know, designing an aircraft and getting it to fly is hard. It's the easiest thing these people are going to do. These teams are going to do in the process. Like you said, aircraft turbines aren't designed to stay at a constant speed. They're designed for, you know, the OEI issues that you need. So you have a lot of extra power necessary to support the certification that you don't necessarily need, that consumes a lot of fuel. So now you get to optimize some really interesting processes. You know, I got Safran's using a basis of the Arno engine for the Electra EL9. GE is the CT7, which is a fantastic engine with millions and millions of hours on it. We are a large owner of CT7s, you know, in our S92s and our 189s. So, yeah, it's just good to see this happening, and it's going to be really an interesting blend. I was wondering when cars are going to go to like a small motor with a hybrid propulsion system without as a hybrid, not just having a mechanical drivetrain. So I'd like
well,
to
you
see
know
that
what?
Happen,
and I don't know the details, but over lunch today, we have somebody here who's a car designer and I need to follow up with him, but there is a hybrid electric car, but it basically has a very small engine that was designed exactly like we're talking about this turbine. So electric only is 200 miles.
Sure.
But you put, I think it's a 10-gallon tank. So with the 10-gallon tank basically charging, it's an electric, it's electrified, right? So the motor is just there to charge it as you go, 800-mile range.
Yeah, amazing.
On 10 or 12-gallon tank. So I want to get some details on that. But, yeah, as we get more and more creative, so let me ask you this. So, you know, you're looking at Vertical Aero. Eve is on your kind of your roadmap. Elroy Air, which we just had them on. Hey, we'd love to get Eve or Vertical on. So if you know those guys and could point them this way.
Will do.
Or you know what else? Also, being Norwegian, anybody from the Norwegian authority, the government, to come on and talk about what they're doing there so we can give it a voice, Dave, we would love to have them come on.
That would be great. I'll have some names that I'll send out some notes to them and then introduce you to them. So I think everyone you mentioned, I think, really deserves to be listened to because what they're doing, you know, what Vertical's doing is just fantastic. They'll be unveiling their conforming design on the 10th of December in London at Canary Wharf.
Okay.
So Stuart Simpson and his team are doing a fantastic job. The Eve team is as well. They're going about it in a nice pragmatic way, but it's Embraer, right? They know how to do it. They've done it before. But specifically there's been a lot of interest in what we're doing in Norway, but I don't know that it's really set in the complexity of the operation that we're doing. It wasn't a demo flight. It was, we're doing commercial ops. We're doing multiple flights a day. And that the leadership from the Norwegian Civil Aviation Authority's team, Avinor's team, the air traffic management, the ministry. I've met with the Minister of Transport three times. You know, he's been in the aircraft a few times. He's just excited. The whole government's excited about it. You fly out of Stavanger and there's the flight, the plane watchers are all just lined up taking pictures of it. It's really been great. So I'd like you to have a chance to talk with someone who is really part of that process and get their voice heard.
Let's do this. Let's get one person from the Norwegian side of things. And then here's what I'd like to do is when this is wrapped up, let's let's throw this out there. Let's do a webinar where our entire audience, we can do it live. I would love to have you on as Bristow. Let's have somebody on from Beta and then somebody on from the Norwegian Authority. And let's actually just talk about everything that we learned. Let's people, you know, we can do it in some segments from technology. Lessons learned, business case, operational constraints, because we're actually doing that. We're going to be doing some webinars monthly, and it's a thing we're starting to grow, get a lot of interest in. But the great thing is for our audience, because then they can ask in. We also do it live on Zoom, but they can ask questions. And the best part of this is the Q&A, because people love to learn, but it also highlights the work that all of you guys did and also gives it a voice and a platform. So, Dave, that's an open invitation, because we would love to do that and host that. So.
I'd love to do that too. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay. Awesome. Well, man, keep knocking them alive. And if you have any big developments, any more aha moments, Dave, you are always welcome on. And we got to find a time and a way to meet in person someday. And maybe we'll have to meet over in Stavanger.
I'm happy to meet anybody there.
If you're there next spring, I'm not kidding. If you're there next spring, let me know your dates.
I will.
And I'll take some time off and I'll fly over there and then see you guys, do some filming, and then I'll see some family. So.
That'd be great. Great. It's a pleasure to be back.
All right. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.